This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com.
Hello, this is Beth Warner, and I'm joined today for a conversation with Eric Yeager, Assistant Director of the Office of Research and Arts Technology at Illinois State University, Jeff Grab, Technology Director at Mennonite College of Nursing at ISU, and Pete Juvenal, Systems Coordinator at College of Business, again with Illinois State University. Thanks for joining us today, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So could you all talk a bit about how you've been using iTunes U? It seems problematic that an iTunes U channel that's usually a destination, but it's becoming more of a feed. And how can an organization leverage the subscription model of RSS podcasting?
iTunes U for us has been a nice way for our alum to connect with our alumni. There have been several large college projects that we've worked on that we've been able to kind of port out to iTunes U and alumni interviews. We have a early career achievement awards. Mm-hmm. All of those we were able to put out there, and it just kind of raises the awareness of what's going on at our institution, and it's been really nice for that.
I would have to add to that one of the things that I think marks this transition, though, is that all these formats are popular because of iTunes.
Right.
iTunes created the model, mm-hmm. and iTunes U really created the model, like, and extended it to higher education.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there wouldn't be these other outlets if they hadn't created iTunes U, probably, or not in the same way. And the other thing is that iTunes U kind of provided an easy way in for people because they were so used to living in that beautiful silver interface. it was something they were familiar with, that they were comfortable with. I mean, they bought music all the time. They got podcasts all the time. It's something that they could go to when they weren't relearning things. So even though there's all these other media distribution tools that are coming out now, mm-hmm. To all these different formats, that none of them would probably exist in the same way if it hadn't been for iTunes U kind of creating this initial capability.
I was going to say, still you have our faculty who have been kind of drawn into the idea of media creation with iTunes U because they're familiar with it. And giving them iTunes U and saying, here's where the destination is going to be, has been helpful for them to kind of ease the fear and tension of creating a podcast.
Well, I also think, though, that before iTunes U came along, we had different venues of podcasting. Like, what was it, Podcast Pickle? There was all these places that you could go and get podcasts from, but...
Yeah, it was like FirePod. There
right.
was all this sort
oh, right.
of...
Oh, right, I remember
Google.
That.
So,
yeah. Yeah. So there really wasn't this uniformed way of doing it that was mm-hmm. as popular as what iTunes U pulled out, at least for the education field. So it kind of gave us a good front mm-hmm. For distributing what we thought was good content.
It is kind of problematic, getting back to the second mm-hmm. part of the question. And the thing is that thing about having such a dominant means of distribution mm-hmm. like iTunes U and having it be so influential kind of in this space means that you're kind of along for the ride.
Yeah.
So when they decide to change... Mm-hmm. Guess what? You're changing with them.
Your process.
Or yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or abandoning that approach entirely. Like, you're changing your processes. You're changing how your folks are accessing it. And Apple's changed a lot of that just recently here. And so we've had to have the decision as a campus. Well, are some people going to continue with this? Are some people going to find other outlets? Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot more choices now, and they wouldn't have existed without iTunes U. But there's still a recognition. It's very dominant in the space. So do you accept the terms that they are offering or mm-hmm. not?
And by having all of these different distribution models now, do you find that your message gets splintered with people taking off in different directions? Do you find that yeah. there are ways and means that you as university representatives can begin to bring this model back together to really get your message across in a more coordinated way?
He's our social media person, yeah. so I'm going to let him
ask okay.
The kind of goal that we're moving towards is one entry point into the media mm-hmm. that is produced, where a faculty member or somebody wishing to produce something has one entry point, and then it goes out to iTunes U or YouTube or Vimeo,
Facebook whatever.
Or whatever,
okay.
that it isn't necessarily splintered as much as it is meeting people where they're at. And with the kind of turnover of so many of these environments, like, you know, here's, it's month four and, you know, Vimeo is new and Vimeo is hot, or Google+, that, gosh, last summer it was June, Google+ blew up, and it was kind of slow by August. And so, you know, the goal for us is, in terms of media distribution, is to kind of give people an entry point and then just kind of point the stream out to wherever is hot and relevant at that particular moment.
I think it also depends on who your audience is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There have been many professors that we've had discussions with in our different areas that have kind of talked about, like, for instance, Facebook seems a little too hip, kind of, a little too...
a little too personal.
Yeah, and some people even commented that they feel it's creepy to use. Pete actually has had a lot of success using it with students in the past.
Well, there was also, wasn't there a law or something, some state...
So I think it was in Missouri that passed a law that you couldn't friend your students if you're an elementary
school
teacher.
And so then that totally eliminated an education aspect of it for teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
It kind of delegitimized it. I mean, there have been a lot of conversations they've had with their colleagues that they start to wonder if it's been delegitimized to a certain degree. But, I mean, there's still lots of outlets. I mean, YouTube, Facebook, any of these, I think Pete's point is still cogent. They won't stay on top for forever.
Right, right.
And so you
Google
need
Buzz.
Some things disappear eventually. And so the problem you have is that you need to decide, well, this media is going to probably exist for a while. Faculty don't just create something, or the university doesn't just create something for a media engagement type activity and then just abandon it. They usually want to keep it around, and so you need to put it in places where people can get to it. Mm-hmm. And so it needs to be kind of portable. Right.
The other big piece that I would add to that, too, is that we have been involving individual PR folks into this discussion as well, because there's a branding element to media being put out, that you don't want to put it out somewhere that cause a negative view of your institution or your college or whatever you're doing. So that's been a critical discussion. Our PR person internal has controlled where stuff goes.
Right. Yeah, where and what and in what frame of mind it's in is important.
You got to know your audience.
Context. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how do you look at, depending on what the particular piece of information going out is, you were talking about being able to have one point of entry and then distributing the information. Do you have good methods for repurposing content over time if these are more timeless or less time sensitive types of applications?
That's a hard one. Our university is actually really only getting rolling in this conversation. Our library is starting an institutional repository project that will deal with some of those issues. We're a very decentralized campus on a technology level, which is unusual in this day and age. However, what that means is that kind of people develop their own methods in their own areas. It leads to a lot of innovation, but at the same time, when it comes to like, well, who had what when, sometimes those people move on, things kind of get lost in so we're trying to kind of counter that with efforts like that. As for repurposing stuff, that gets really interesting. One of the biggest things I think that was a challenge for us in talking with folks on campus is that where will this end up eventually?
Right.
And who will control it?
Right.
And so how it gets repurposed is still a big question even for us. There's going to be a lot of this content out there, and it will stay out there for a while, and it may end up in an institutional repository. But who gets to determine, is it suitable to use this like in a big like video that we're going to show 10 years from now, that's like, oh, remember 2011, you know, sort of thing. What a crazy year that was.
Well, there's also the argument that intellectual property of professors, and if you're repurposing content, are you taking something away from the professor that might be, you know, a trademark of their class? Kind of waters down the idea of seeing or having that professor there or tenure aspect of it. I represent the College of Fine Arts, and we're still in the argument or the discussion of copyright. And repurposing, if you're trying to clear copyright just for one showing of something, then trying to keep track of a lot of that stuff just starts to become a nightmare until they figure that part out too.
Yes. So we've talked a little bit about some of the challenges that you've encountered with this emergence of the media creation and distribution. Are there any other aspects of this that we haven't touched on?
There's more people trying to find answers to questions, especially with copyright. What's fair use? What's not fair use? What can be used in public performances? Can it be archived?
What's a remix?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's been a lot of dialogue that's just sort of been a side effect of having this iTunes U.
Just realizing the amount of time it took to help people do this.
Mm-hmm.
the amount of investment. And very quickly, we were like, man, we wish we had a central division on campus that just handled the process of creating multimedia for faculty or helping them create multimedia.
It still feels really techy to a lot of people. And so entering that door is imposing. One of our unicorns that we're chasing is the idea of a zero effort workflow that, you know, faculty member wishes to make a podcast. It's a button that they hit.
Are there different needs and different approaches? How does it fit in with your profile on distance education?
I can take maybe a piece of that. The thing we always tell faculty is you've got to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For me, I had this great podcast that I just finished redoing last summer, but it started with a digital video camera that I had in the back of the room and I just hit record. That looks awful now, but it was a start, and you get you familiar, and you kind of go from there. The big thing that we have been looking at is audience. That the stuff that is external facing, you know, has to look good. And fortunately, we have a wonderful media university communications department that has been producing this stuff for our YouTube channel that looks stellar.
But on the flip side of that, then faculty are seeing those sorts of content.
Exactly.
And they're wondering why I can't have this. I want flashy graphics. I want it to come by. I want to have the university logo, which is all, like, considering what they've just seen, a reasonable expectation. However, they're going to need to produce maybe, if they're going to do this one per class or even one per week, that we're talking dozens of pieces of media and a lot of production time. And explaining to them exactly, no, it's not like it goes into the magic machine and comes out like the other side like that. There's an art kind of to it.
How's providing IT support for creative and artistic students and instructors different perhaps than working with those in other disciplines?
Well, with creative arts, part of the problem that I run into is I'm not fully an artist myself. And so there are angles to the faculty that almost require me to have training in art, because what's important to them may not be important to the tech. I mean, for example, this has to do with podcasting, but if a projector can't do the right color, it really messes up the class for the professor, mm-hmm. and it's because color is important. We deal a lot with performances, and you know, do they do the whole performance? Do they do clips of the performance? Mm-hmm. Trying to, things like that, the problem we ran into is that they would tend to be thinking more on a performance level mm-hmm. than it would be on a teaching level. Mm. Like one thing that we ran into that just totally blew my mind was we have a Shakespeare festival every summer. And I was just giving out ideas of what they could do to podcast for shows coming up, draw public attention to it. And I said, you know, you could do a time lapse of set creation. And the response I got was, we can't, because there are things that an artist does in the set creation that they hide from the public because it's their trademark, it's their skill, and we would be giving away,
like, their kind of their
trade
secret.
Their trade secret, exactly. Okay. And it's just, that totally blew me away. Because I'm sitting there thinking, oh, we need content. Let's just do this, let's just do that. But they were always putting the reins on it because there was an angle to it that I just didn't get.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there was a feeling that they were giving it away? Like, I mean, literally giving it away? I mean, because it's free content now? Is that kind of the idea?
Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's this barrier that was there. And when they would hit a wall, and rightly so, they would just stop.
So given the kinds of things that you've experimented with so far, are there some other ways you could advise institutions to use their iTunes U channels?
The advice I would give people is that just be thinking about not just what this does for you today or for the one of or for this event or for that event or for homecoming or what have you. Thinking about where does this really need to go for you? What role does it fill? To borrow from Bill Gates, where do you want to go today? Mm-hmm. You know, and then the follow-up question is, where do you want to go tomorrow? Mm-hmm. The name of our presentation that we're doing here is Tip of the Media Iceberg. And one of the things that we felt is like that we got into this whole media conversation with iTunes U, and it was so much bigger than iTunes U. It was so completely big. And it actually had implications far beyond technology. It had implications far beyond copyright. Right. It had implications about where does the institution put these priorities and move these resources, mm-hmm. and then what does it do with these things?
Well, and also don't make iTunes your sole way of doing it. Sure. The technology is constantly changing. So when iTunes is big, you know, then YouTube came out and started doing a bunch of pushing towards doing video. So there's always something just right out there. And if you just keep yourself in iTunes U and don't think of your media as going anywhere else, then you really limit yourself.
Are there any other thoughts on iTunes U and media creation for higher education that you'd like to share at this point?
One of the things that we've talked about is that if you're in higher education right now, welcome to the business of content creation.
Right, I mean,
a multimedia production is part of your lifestyle and your mission now, whether you like it or not. And we've all discussed that at length. The other thing is that we've discussed a bunch is that you're also in the distribution business, like it or not, and all the legal implications that comes with that. So that was one of the things that was kind of a hard thing to swallow for all of us. But it's also kind of what's the whole saying? The Chinese character for crisis is the same as one as opportunity. And that's kind of how we've approached it. It's like, okay, we have to address these issues to be relevant, to address what our students are asking of us, to have media in the classroom and make it be good media. Those all things matter, but it's like, let's do it and, you know, let's see where we end up.
All right. Well, thank you all very much for your time today. This has been a great conversation.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.